Hey, what's up? This is Kaiser. You're, of course, listening to me on Super Trainer. And today I have back on the blog Eric Cressy, just to touch a few bases and cover a few of the issues that we've been talking about on the blog, on the forum, and that, in general, are going on in the training industry altogether. So thanks for coming on with me, Eric.
Yeah, no problem. Always happy to be on.
Yeah, so one of the things I want to talk to you about, the main thing that seems to be going around the training industry, it's really big these days, I know you brought it up on your blog recently, was the whole idea of accreditation in the personal training industry. I know some of the states are pushing for that, and you're kind of a proponent for that. So can you kind of talk about your feelings on the whole issue?
Yeah, I think it's a big issue, obviously. You know, nowadays, you guys get something that comes up every time somebody gets injured working with a trainer in whatever capacity. So, I mean, you got a lot of states that are pushing for licensure, much like a physical therapist or even massage therapist, and certainly doctors. I think it's a good idea. I think to standardize things as much as you can. I mean, you need it with accountants, you need it with lawyers, you need it with doctors. I think there's, a certain amount of credibility it would absolutely lend to our industry if it was, something that was a little bit more, challenging to get. I think obviously the opposition to that really comes from, some of the trainer organizations. I know that IHRSA has been kind of against it. IDA have turned it down quite a bit too, just because they think it'll discourage people from getting in the industry. Particularly, I think they talked with respect to the, aerobics instructors and things like that, where it may be a lower education requiring position, but at the same time, there are certainly ramifications of not knowing what you're doing during those times.
Yeah, but how do you feel? I've always kind of felt that the industry, in some ways, it polices itself. The trainers that shine, that are qualified, they're the ones that stand out. And then we have all the celebrity trainers out in the media that really set a high standard for what the public expects from trainers. So I've always looked at it as kind of a survival of the fittest, not a work as usual, or not just you hanging a diploma on the wall and putting your shingle outside and getting started. But in your opinion, that's not a good way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point. I don't know that that's always the case. I think it certainly happens in situations. I'm not sure that, you deal with a lot of trainers who may be very good at what they do, and have a perfect example of that is you see a lot of great people coming out of college strength conditioning who try to go to the private sector and open facilities and things like that, and they fall flat on their face because they're great trainers but don't necessarily know the business. There are a lot of people out there who are very good businessmen who do absolutely moronic crap. I'm not saying that's necessarily the norm, but it is certainly something that's going on. And, even the celebrity trainers, you guys have seen what's going on with Tracy Anderson. Some of that stuff is just mind-numbing. And, I'm pretty sure every fitness professional with a brain watches The Biggest Loser and wants to stab their eyes out.
Yeah.
So I think that, certainly there's a lot of stuff in the media that makes us look really bad. I hesitate to say the term us because it's one of the reasons why I've kind of actually separated myself from the private/personal training stuff and done obviously a lot more strength conditioning and semi-private training just because it allows us to spread our gospel, so to speak, a little bit more effectively. But at the same time, we see a lot of athletes and a lot of weekend warriors who we can help with some of the stuff that we're doing.
Yeah, no, that's one distinction that you always make really clear, that you are not a personal trainer. So I'm not even going to say that, but it's always good to get your opinion, though, on what's going on, because I know a lot of the trainers...
I don't say that in a negative light either. I think it's a hugely important occupation, and they help a lot of people and stuff like that. It's just honestly what we do at our facility. It's just like saying an accountant that he's just a CFO or something like that. It's not necessarily better or worse. It's just a different occupation altogether, I guess you could say.
All right, I feel you. Yeah. So you were talking about your business. How is it set up? What are your training sessions run like over there?
We see no more than 6 athletes per coach. They run kind of all day, and obviously we see more of my pro guys during the day, depending on time of year. We have some adult clients that come in during the day. Some of our college guys that they're home on breaks, whether it's summer or Christmas, stuff like that. And then after school, obviously we have a big high school clientele, and as the afternoon goes on, we see a lot more of our adult clients. So that's kind of the flow in terms of clientele. We run it with no more than 6 athletes/clients per coach, and usually what you'll see is between 2 and 3 coaches out on the floor. We usually have one intern on staff who kind of helps out and stuff too. So more often than not, you're never really going to see more than 20 people in our facility at once, and usually up to 4 or 5 of us coaching them. So really how we work is everything's very individualized. We do an individual evaluation with everybody, and everybody is either programmed for by Tony or myself. We're granted we're not a hugely overwhelmingly big business. So, you know, Tony and I can kind of take pride in the fact that we know exactly what goes on with everybody who walks in here. So everyone's programmed for individually. You know, you'll see everybody with their own clipboard, their own program, and in a lot of ways it's run like a college strength and conditioning room in the private sector.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about your whole setup. Because this whole thing about semi-private training, just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I don't know. It seems like a new boot camp program is starting up every week. And, I just wanted to get your take. I think that you explained pretty clearly how you keep things individualized. But there are a lot of programs that don't encourage that. They just say that, throw the clipboard away and just make sure everyone's sweating and having fun. So,
I've never been a huge fan of the term boot camp, to be honest, because it does exactly what you're talking about. It's just like, you know what, if someone comes and sweats and moves a lot, then we take that to mean success. Well, you know what, if you have 15 or 20 people all doing the exact same thing, it doesn't necessarily cater to their individual needs. So I'm not saying that's bad or good. I'm just saying it's probably a different business model and one that I'm not comfortable with. So, like I said, we kind of take pride in knowing exactly what's going on with everybody who comes in. So for us, you know, it's not just about working people out. It's about training them, getting them better at what they want to get better at, and getting them healthy.
All right, I feel what you're saying. Yeah, that's definitely a good way to look at it, one that's not always pushed by other people. Now, what your facility is big for, you do train, weekend warrior types, but in general, what you're known for is for training a lot of high-level athletes, baseball players, and sometimes that world isn't as glamorous as it looks like. So can you talk about some of the pros and cons of training high-level athletes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that we've encountered, but I can be pretty candid about it. I mean, 74% of our clientele is baseball players. So obviously, this time of year right now, when the guys are in season, you know, I had about 18 pro guys here this off season. So obviously, all those guys leave right at the end of February for spring training, and we lose, you know, 6 days a week of training for those guys. So it quiets down just a little bit. But this time of year, we quiet down quite a bit because we're so niched. It's a good thing in the sense that, you know, at the time of year, we need to make renovations and, you know, we can do more continuing education for our staff, and, you know, we can go back and we can analyze our financials and stuff like that and figure out what it is we need to tinker with, or, you know, whatever it is we may be doing. You know, right now we're upgrading a little bit our satellite facility, and flooring is getting delivered today and things like that. But, you know, so it has its perks, but it has its drawbacks too. Obviously, our business is probably, you know, down 40% in terms of training volume at this particular 6 weeks of the year, and we know that's the case. We plan for it, we expect it. So, you know, to a degree, being that niche can be great because we pretty much get everything in the Metro West area from a baseball standpoint. You know, if you're a baseball athlete, you want to train, you come to us. But at the same time, you know, you kind of plan for those peaks and valleys. We know that January, February are going to be absolute madness, and right around the, you know, second or third week in March, usually things start to quiet down. So I usually use this time of year to do a little bit more consulting, you know, travel a little bit more for seminars, and do a little bit more writing and things like that. So it's just, it's honestly better or worse, it's just different, but niche can be good and niche can be bad. I mean, I think there are times when a lot of people see us as only a baseball training facility, you know, probably incorrectly, because we have, you know, I've dealt with high-level basketball, you know, we have Olympic bobsledders, Olympic boxers, stuff like that. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if you know how to train one athlete, chances are you know pretty well how to train another athlete. It's just like, you know, subtle differences among them all. But so, yeah, that's one thing that, you know, we have dealt with, is that we are perceived as almost a baseball-only facility, and it's something that's gradually improving, but it is interesting how what makes you so good can also be kind of a roadblock for you at times.
All right. Wow, that's a very good point. I didn't even think about that, that's the seasonal aspect of it. I was talking about more of the personal aspect, dealing interpersonally with some of the athletes. Sounds like to me, since, you know, from what I know about you, that you're so heavily personally involved in athletics yourself, that you don't really have a problem with it, right?
Yeah, that for me is a hugely important part of it. It's, you know, the reason, I think one of the reasons I miss college strength conditioning so much is that you do form genuine relationships with athletes, and, you know, like, I've taken kids on recruiting visits to college. You know, we've been invited to postseason banquets for teams and things like that. You know, I get text messages all hours of the day. I think I sent about 1,700 text messages 1 month earlier this year just for scheduling purpose and all that. Like, I do want all of our athletes and our clients to know that, you know, we're not just, you know, necessarily, you know, trainers. We're people that they can turn to when they have questions and things like that. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, one of our biggest, you know, responsibilities is not so much a coach, not so much a trainer, not so much a programmer, but, you know, for a lot of these younger guys, we have to be role models, you know, whether that's a role we want to or have or not. This is, you know, the most important aspect of it. So, you know, to that end, it's been very, very important for us to cultivate good relationships with kids, with parents, with coaches,
Oh, wow, that's a really excellent point you made there. Now, kind of the last question I had ready for you was something that you touched on earlier. It was about running a strength practice like a business. And what you said before was right on point, that I'm sure you hear it too. There's a lot of negative talk in the industry from people in the strength conditioning and also from people in personal training. How, getting too business-oriented, getting in the business side, that's selling out, and, you know, you should, whatever. Yeah, I'm sure you hear the chatter too. Now, how do you go about setting up what you do as a proper business? And I think, like, you're one of the best people to talk about this, because of a lot of the guys doing it in the business, you're one of the real purists. So I'd like to hear it from you. How do you make that jump and make it work?
Yeah, are you referring more to, the actual gym itself, or are you talking about more like the product side of things?
I mean everything, and the way you do it. You have the products, on your blog, obviously, you plug your own products, other people's products, and you run a gym, but then you're still a purist when it comes to the technical knowledge and serving the clients, so.
For me, that's always been the foundation for it. I know that since we've opened this facility, we haven't spent a penny on advertising, like nothing. The extent of our advertising is donating money to some of the programs that we work with, and getting Crest Performance in there as a sponsor. Like, we do that for the kids and for the programs because we appreciate their business, not so much because we think we're going to get advertising from it. But for us, it's been sheer word of mouth. If you get results, people will come. And that's been something that's kind of governed how I've approached the product side of things, in the sense that, if you put out a good product that makes sense and helps people, they're going to be loyal customers for the long term. So, I think we got a lot of people on our bandwagon, so to speak, with the Mobility DVD when that first came out, because, people got good results from it, and, we made sure that the product quality was high and all that. So, that kind of snowballed, and we've had, good, loyal, repeat consumers, thereafter with, with all of our other products. But, there's one thing that I thought was really cool was our landlord is a pretty good business guy who always likes to come in and talk shop with us. And he said, when you're in the service industry, and to a degree in the product industry as well, you have to remember that your customers hire and fire you every day. So it's really not acceptable to have days off when you train athletes. Or even if you're just writing like a newsletter or something like that, if you write a crappy newsletter, or, doesn't cover a topic exhaustively, then you've done a disservice to the people that you put it in front of. So, that's always been a mindset that's kind of governed people down.
Yeah, that's a very good point. But how do you grow or manage the business end, or how do you in general just really make sure that's running on all cylinders? Because really the business lives or dies with that, and still keep your eye firmly on the pulse of the training.
Well, I think it's important to have a good separation of responsibilities. I have two business partners. Tony, who handles a lot more of like the training side of stuff with me, and Pete is another one of our business partners who. Basically, he has an MBA. He manages all the billing, the scheduling, stuff like that. So, you kind of have to trust your other guys that they're going to take care of their ends of the bargain. So, for Tony, that means taking care of programming and coaching, and for Pete, it means obviously taking phone calls and things like that, and making sure everybody's scheduled and making sure that the invoices are going out and whatever it is. So, for me, I kind of I spend my life bouncing back and forth between the office, kind of being maybe a middleman between those guys sometimes. But in the grand scheme of things, my biggest responsibility is kind of being the face of the business. People have questions about their injured shoulder or whatever, it's usually, I'm the one that gets called. I can help out with that stuff. But, I think the important thing that I've always seen is that, if you surround yourself with good people who like to work hard and are meticulous about what it is they do, then they'll make you look good. If some people listening, I'd say if you're going to go into business, make sure that you know the right people. I've known Pete since we were 18 years old. We were roommates at our freshman year of college. I transferred when in exercise science. He stuck it out and got an MBA at a great business school. And, I've known Tony since 2003, I'd say, when he first started writing as an author on a website I was the assistant editor of. So he was my roommate for 2 years. So you kind of know what you're getting. It's tough to go into business with people who maybe are a little bit more of a gray area where you're not really sure if they fall on one side or the other.
So. Yeah. No, in business, that trust is going to be there. So the way it sounds like to me is that you kind of, not outsource, but you give that responsibility or really a lot of the burden of the business work to one of your partners.
Yeah. You can even call it outsourcing, because I think what you ultimately try to do, no matter what capacity you work in this world, is you try to get into a position to leverage your strengths. my strength, you know, it's not to sound like condescending or anything, my strengths aren't vacuuming the facility or billing or scheduling or anything like that. It's less efficient for me to do that. So for me, I do a lot more in the context of, you know, answering, you know, tech supported inquiries from, you know, from parents who might be wondering about an injury their younger athlete has, or designing programs for people who come in who have more advanced issues that we need to deal with. So, you know, I'm the one that talks to all the pro sports agents that we deal with, you know, interacting with major league clubs, you know, with respect to players that we see from them. So it just kind of snowballs, and you kind of accidentally learn what your responsibilities are. But like I said, I'm very, very fortunate to have some good guys helping me out around here. And, you know, we have a guy, Brian, who does all of our nutrition stuff. You know, so I don't have to worry about that at all, even though I know it's a hugely important thing.
Well, some excellent information you had right there. All right, Eric. Yeah, so I planned on this being very short, but you shared some really good info, and we ended up going for a while. But thanks for coming on and clearing up a lot of these things for my listeners and for anyone else that might be listening.
Anytime, man. Happy to help.